Okay, I call this meeting to order. Could you please hold the noise down? We're going to proceed. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my honor to be your moderator at this special town meeting. I declare a quorum to be present. Emergency fire exits are at the back of the hall, as well as to the side, to my left and right, going out behind the curtain. Would you please rise for a pledge of allegiance to the flag? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. The certified free cash as of July 1st, 2014, according to town accountant Christine Nyan, is $3,322,365. I have examined and found in order the call of this meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of mailing the warrant to residents. I ask Chuck Woodard, chair of the Board of Selectmen, for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of this meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles in the warrant. He said, so moved. Does that receive a second? It does. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It is unanimous. Unfortunately, there are no coffee or snacks tonight. The only announcement that I have is that I'm told there's a possibility of a forum on rail trails in January, at which questions and comments can be made. Bathrooms are located across the hall. Extra warrants are in front of the hall here or on the tables before you entered the auditorium. If you do not have a warrant and would like one, please raise your hand and the Boy Scouts will bring you one. So raise your hand if you need a warrant. The Boy Scouts, could you pick them up here and hand them out to those people whose hands are raised? Could you please keep your hands raised, and they will get them to you. While we're there, the leader of this Boy Scout Troop 63 is Ken Chung. I'd also like to give thanks to Sharon Tentarelli, who arranged the scouts who are running the mics tonight, who are Jonah Coffin, Ryan Grummer, Parker Simon, and Mark Tentarelli. Please join me in thanking the scouts. I'd like to introduce the town officials involved in town meeting and present tonight. Please raise your hand when your name is called for our new attendees. To my right is Rosemary Harvell, the town clerk. To her right is Veronica Craven, assistant town clerk. To my left is Chuck Woodard, chair of the Board of Selectmen, Larry O'Brien, selectman, Bob Hardy, selectman, Len Simon, selectman, Pat Brown, selectman. Town manager is Maureen Valenti. Town accountant is Christine Nyan. Is the assistant town accountant, is Robin Porcella? Is not here. At the computer, we have Patty Golden, the administrative assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Layla Frank is the supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones manages the town's legal department. Mark Thompson is our technology administrator, and his assistant is Brian Powell. The entire LSAV staff and building staff, I thank them, including Chuck and Kevin. The camera crew is Ken Lockhart, Ron Riggert, and Lynn Poirot. Thanks to all of them. Immediately to my left is Town Council Paul Kenny. Finance Committee is Mark Manasian, Andrew Sullivan, Adrian Davies, Fred Floru, Bill Nealon Jr., Jose Garcia Maiten, Susan Berry Chair, Jeff Barker, Joan Carlton. Assistant Town Manager is Marianne Bilodeau. Director of Assessing is Cynthia Jerry. Planning and Community Development, Jody Kablack. DPW Director is Bill Place here? No. Fire Chief Bill Miles and Police Chief Scott Nix are otherwise occupied, and our facilities director is Jim Kelly. I'd like to review some procedural matters for the benefit of the hall. No smoking in the hall. Please turn off all cell phones and any other devices that emit noises. Please give your name and address each time you speak in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your hand. Do not stand at the mics. Microphones, I'll be able to see you in your seat. If you are sitting near a standing mic and I recognize you, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, please wait for a runner, the Boy Scout runner, to bring you a handheld mic. That mic will be on. Believe it or not, you do not have to blow into it. We are using runners again tonight because of the very long aisles. Makes it difficult for a voter in the middle to get up to a standing mic to speak. All motions of substance, including motions to amend, must be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the computer in the front of the hall so that they can show it to all the voters. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when first recognized and not at the end of a statement or question. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees and representatives may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows in the sections to my left and right. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern to you not to bolt the hall as soon as we have voted on the matter. You'll be treating your neighbors disrespectfully by not listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. I'm encouraging those of you who don't usually speak at town meeting to do so. Counting will take considerably longer in the auditorium because of the very long rows and no aisle breaks, so please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the standing vote is obvious, I will call for a head count by tellers myself. I will announce the percentage vote required for passage of an article before you vote. There should be no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, town official, or employee. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion on each binding article and fair play on all articles. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. May we have a motion under Article 1? Sorry, Jim, before you start, if you have any seats available next to where you're sitting, could you raise your hand once again? And could everyone come in, please? Fire Chief doesn't like us standing, wants us all to be seated. So if everyone could come in and grab a seat next to anyone who's got their hand raised. Mr. Kelly.
Ready? Move that the town of Sudbury appropriate the amount of $1,121,000 for the purpose of paying costs of partial roof replacement, window and door replacement, and envelope repair at the General John Nixon Elementary School, 472 Concord Road, including the payment of all costs incidental or related thereto, the project, which proposed repair project would materially extend the useful life of the school and preserve an asset that otherwise is capable of supporting the required educational program, and for which the town of Sudbury has applied for a grant from the Massachusetts School Building Authority, the MSBA. Set amount to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee, School Building Committee. To meet this appropriation, the Treasurer is authorized to borrow set amount under Mass General Law, Chapter 44, or pursuant to any other enabling authority. The Town of Sudbury acknowledges that the MSBA's grant program is a non-entitlement discretionary program based on need as determined by the MSBA. And any project cost the town incurs in excess of any grant approved by and received from the MSBA shall be the sole responsibility of the Town of Sudbury. Provided further that any grant that the Town of Sudbury may receive from the MSBA for the project shall not exceed the lesser of 36.89% of eligible approved project costs as determined by MSBA, or 2, the total maximum grant amount determined by the MSBA, provided that any appropriation hereunder shall be subject to and contingent upon an affirmative vote of the town to exempt the amounts required for the payment of interest and principal on said borrowing from the limitations on taxes imposed by Mass General Law, Chapter 59, Section 21C, Proposition 2.5, and that the amount of borrowing authorized pursuant to this vote shall be reduced by any grant amount set forth in the project funding agreement that may be executed between the Town of Sudbury and the MSBA.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kelly, for presentation.
Thank you.
Were you going to point out the differences between this article and what's in the warrant, or would you like me to do it?
I would like you to do it.
Okay. So for openers, the number $1,121,000 is in the motion. It was not obviously in the warrant because we didn't have that number. And then the last four or five lines about exempting it from Proposition 2.5 and that the amount being authorized would be reduced by any grant that we receive from MSBA. Some of that wording was added because the MSBA insists that every motion be pre-approved by them, is my understanding. Yeah. So this was sent to them. They made some changes, and what you're seeing now is mostly the changes they made. Mr. Kelly.
Thank you. Yes, the MSBA is very particular, as you can tell by the motion. Thank you very much. My name is Jim Kelly. I'm here to present for your consideration Article 1, which is the partial roof window door replacement at the Nixon School. This is the picture of the Nixon School. General John Nixon School, built originally in 1960. We renovated the Nixon School in 1990. And then in 1994, we practically doubled the size of the Nixon School by adding about 30,000 square feet. The Nixon School serves about 400 students today. Last year, or 2 years ago, we approved this town meeting another MSBA project to replace a partial roof at Nixon. The 1960 portion that was renovated in 1990 was replaced a couple years ago. I'm going to just give you a little background of some of the MSBA particulars, show you some pictures, I think is the best way to explain what we're doing at the school. In 2010, the Permanent Building Committee, the schools, and the town had a survey done of all the roofs in the town, every town building and every school building. It was, at the time, there was a need. We were looking at Noyce School that needed a roof replacement, but we needed to look far ahead in order to be prepared for long-term planning because our buildings are going to get older and we want to be ready to understand how we can fund these projects going forward. And the MSBA is a great opportunity for the town of Sudbury. In 2011, actually, the Peter Noyce School was part of an MSBA project. We replaced the windows, boilers, and the roof. And the town received a little bit of over $730,000 in reimbursement from the state. And then a couple years ago, I mentioned the portion of Nixon that was done. That project, the town received just about $250,000 of reimbursement from MSBA. This is an aerial view of the Nixon School. Oftentimes, when I'm presenting or saying something, I know it so well, I want to make sure that I'm bringing other people who may not know the building. And so this is up in the air, up high. It's on Concord Road, as you know. The major portion of this project is going to take place in that front section, that lower part, which you can see where the arrows points to the cafetorium roof. That's the original 1960 administration wing that houses the cafetorium, boiler room, kitchen in the administration. That area is where primarily most of the work is going to take place. Behind that area is the original 1960 building, and then to the left and going up to the back left side where the gym is, that was the addition built in 1994. When we did noise a few years ago, it was called the Green Repair Program. This one they call the Accelerated Repair Program. And that's partly why we're here tonight, because it's an accelerated program. The MSBA has a deadline that we have to complete this work. It's very difficult to meet some of these deadlines when you're doing work at a school because you have 2 months to get the work done. So our goal is to have this work done this summer. So we have to get this bid out by March in order to get the work started and get finished this summer. As you probably know, and why we go through a lot of work to participate with these programs is because we are going to be eligible for 36.9% of a reimbursement for the eligible project costs. And as the slide says, the intent of this MSBA program, and it's a good intent, is to extend the useful life of a school of an asset that is otherwise structurally and educationally sound. And this is a statewide program, so it makes a lot of sense. Excuse me. So the process so far, we started this process just under a year ago when we submitted the request to the MSBA. It's called the Statement of Interest. Well, in June, the MSBA took them a little while, but they invited us into the program. So that's when we really got started working. The Sudbury School Committee, the Permanent Building Committee, Mr. Craig Blake on the Permanent Building Committee has done a tremendous amount of work. We have hired an owner's project manager, an architect. We've studied the building. We've come up with schematic plans. And we have a cost estimate, and that's the cost estimate that you're going to see tonight and perhaps approve. Just a few weeks ago, the MSBA officially welcomed us into the program and told us we can go forward and request funding, and that's why we're here tonight. Next week, we vote. If this passes tonight, there'll be an election next week to approve the money. And then, as I said before, we'd like to be in there the day the school children are leaving the school. We want to be walking right behind them with some construction people taking some things apart and be done by the end of summer. So the cost of the project, the estimated total project cost is $1,096,268. Again, Sudbury's share of 36.89% coming back from the state. So we're looking at perhaps Sudbury's obligation of about $700,000. That's almost a $400,000 reimbursement. So this, again, is a good opportunity and why we went through the effort to be here tonight, because it is a lot of effort, and I appreciate everybody being here. So this is the interior view of the current cafetorium, and I can assure you those curtains aren't there to look good, because they're just not very good looking, and I hope that doesn't offend anybody. But they are the thermal barrier, because the windows are so poor. I mean, they're 55 years old. They're single pane. There's some plexiglass. They're so poor that it's very cold, very drafty. And in the summer, spring and fall, the sunlight comes in and actually heats it up. So they have no real thermal barrier. So these curtains really protect the room from the elements outside. This picture shows on the left side, it is the outside of that same curtain wall. It's a whole full glass wall, quite an interesting design, but quite inefficient at this point. So part of this project is to make this more efficient. One of the schemes has the use of a translucent panel that we'll use up on the higher portion of the glazing. And the translucent panel will let some light through, but not glaring sunlight. And also we'll get a better R value with that translucent panel. Again, more kind of thinking of energy savings is a good thing to do. And the one on the right are the windows that are in the kitchen at the Nixon. This is, again, another view of the 1960 windows, the single pane glass. This particular shot are the administration offices, and I can assure you that on a cold, windy day, no matter even how warm you set the thermostat, you're going to be very cold working at those desks. The project consists of about 3,300 square feet of glazing that will be replaced. So again, just to show you, you know, up close what we're doing, this is a view of the backside of the cafetorium roof. I'm standing on the newer PVC, white PVC roof that we put in a couple years ago. This roof is very small, this cafetorium. In fact, it's only 5,000 square feet out of a total roof area of Nixon is 55,000 square feet. We'll have new insulation, we'll meet the energy code, and the manufacturer's warranty on the roof shingles is 50 years, which is great. Let's hope it works. This picture is the caulking in the back of the building that is deteriorated. Part of the project, this is one of the portions of the project, is to remove and replace that caulking that's opened up and deteriorated. The one on the left is actually a seam alongside a aluminum frame window, and the picture on the right is a control joint. And what happens clearly is this is our envelope, and we have water and air intrusion, and we want to stop that. Again, this is another picture of that. What is interesting with the MSBA project is this portion of the cost of this total project is not going to be reimbursable by MSBA. I don't really know why. I think the caulking is as important. It's not horizontal as a roof, but it's an important part of the feature. But we are, as Sudbury and the Permanent Building Committee and the School Committee, are committed to replacing this caulking as well.
Mr. Kelly?
Yes.
That was the 10-minute buzzer. How much longer do you have?
Final step. 2 minutes.
Does Mr. Kelly have permission to hold to go on for another 2 minutes?
Thank you.
All those opposed, he does have permission. Go ahead.
So this is almost the final step for funding because there's a lot of work to do if the project is funded tonight and at the election. That's when we have the funding, but then we want to do the work. So we're going to get going as soon as possible. One of the next steps is tonight is to ask your approval to appropriate $1.21 million. If a bond is issued, we'll only borrow what the town share of the actual construction cost is. But if that is $700,000, for example, the tax impact on our average home valuation is about $13 per year over a 10-year period. That's the bonding term we're going to use. Hopeful, at least, you always look to be hopeful, going out to bid. It's a good time of the year to bid a roofing job and an envelope job. We'll be bidding this in the dead of winter. So that's, you know, hopefully that means we get good bids and we get people that are ready to go on June 27th. So that's the Nixon roof. Thank you for coming and listening, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Okay. The Finance Committee have an opinion?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article. This is work that needs to be done to preserve a town asset. It's eligible for an MSBA grant, and once completed, the building will be much improved and vastly more energy efficient.
Selectman? I can't hear that. Yeah, I think you're off. Push it towards you. There's a button on top. Push towards you.
How's that? Board of Selectmen supports the article.
Okay. Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on this article? Please raise your hand. Yes, sir. Can we get a mic right over here?
Mr. Moderator, I just wanted to report out that the Strategic Financial Planning Committee for Capital Funding, which has representatives from the Board of Selectmen, and the two school districts and the Finance Committee have unanimously voted to recommend issuing this, paying for this by bond. And that's really the only way that we looked at it. So that's our recommendation. Thanks. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Yes, can we get a mic right over here?
Jamie Gossel, Spiller Circle for the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. I also like to report that the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee unanimously supports this project as well.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Could you stand up, please, and we'll get a mic over to you? Thank you.
Just a question. What happens
David
Longland, Wagon Wheel Road, Sudbury. What happens if the project bids come in over the estimates?
Mr. Kelly, do you have that answer, or someone else wants to answer it?
I should be able to handle that question. We wouldn't be able to award the project.
How many bids are you seeking?
As many as we can. It'll be an open public bid. It'll be advertised through the state central register. We'd like to get more. The more bids, the better, because that creates competition. Thank you.
When you finish speaking, could you give the mic back to the Boy Scout so he can get it to the next person? Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Way back there. Could you stand up, please, sir? We get your mic.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road. Just a quick question. Why aren't we using free cash for this? Because I'm sure at town meeting in spring we'll be doling that out again. This seems like it's a great project to burn down some of the free cash on.
It was heavily discussed just as recently as probably an hour ago. Lots of reasons, pros and cons, of course, always. The selectmen voted, I believe, to pursue this project through borrowing. One of the comments that I heard that I thought was particularly on point was that, you know, this is a long-term sort of construction project. Hopefully we won't be doing this roof for another, if the manufacturer's correct, 50 years. The windows should last 50 years. So we're going to borrow over 10 years, but that spreads out sort of the obligation of having the school work done. So we'll have a kindergarten or a first grader in there now and their family sort of paying. And then, you know, 9 years, there'll be a new batch of kids and their families are sort of contributing to it. So that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so that if that's the argument, then in the springtime when we do free cash, I would not expect the free cash to be spent on anything that is anything that's longer term in duration, because we flip flop each time on how we spend the free cash. Just real quick, second question. I'll sit down. Was the Board of Selectmen unanimous? And if they were not, can we hear from anyone that disagreed?
We were unanimous.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Please raise your hand. I see no one. Unless could you stand up, please? That's much better. Thank you. Can we get a mic over to this gentleman?
Although this infrastructure is proposed Glenn Merrill Skoloff, 18 Allen Place. Although the infrastructure you're proposing to put in is going to last 50 years, will the building last 50 years? It was built in 1960. Has the rest of the building been assessed? In other words, I mean, what's next?
Yes, as part of the MSBA project, the state is exactly on point of what you're looking at. They would not contemplate funding a project if the building was not going to sustain the project.
Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard? If you wish to be heard, just stand up. I see no one, so we're going to proceed on to a vote. Oh, could you stand up, please? Great. Can we get a mic over here?
Thank you. Thank you. Kevin Seek, 42 Ridge Hill Road. Question regarding the construction work that you're going to be doing on the building. Have you looked at other parts of the building that could be repaired at this time? And if so, would those repairs be repairs that could be covered under this initiative?
Yes, we did. During the SOI project, we felt as though we found the opportunities that are necessary at Nixon, and we captured all of those opportunities, including, for instance, the caulking. However, not reimbursable, but it's something that has to be done. So, yes, we looked at the entire building.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Please stand and raise your card if you wish to be heard. I see no one. We're going to proceed on to a vote. What you see on the screen in front of you is the vote. It is, because it's borrowing, it requires a two-thirds vote. So I'll ask all those in favor of Article 1, signify the motion on the Article 1 on the screen, signify by raising your hands. All those opposed, it is passed almost unanimously, so it's well over two-thirds. Article 1 passes. We're going to move on to Article 2. Can we have a motion under Article 2, please?
Move to appropriate the sum of $2,900,000 for the acquisition in fee simple up to, should be 33 acres.
37?
Is it 37 plus or minus acres, being a portion of the land commonly known as the Johnson Farm property located at 189 Landham Road, Sudbury, Massachusetts, for conservation and passive recreation purposes and all expenses in connection therewith, inclusive of bond and note issuance expense, and to raise this appropriation, the Treasurer, with the approval of the Board of Selectmen, is authorized to borrow a total of $2,900,000 under General Law Chapter 44, Section 7, with a sum of $1,900,000 contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion in accordance with General Law Chapter 59, Section 21C, and with the sum of $1 million of Community Preservation Act funds, with the borrowing authorization as set forth in General Law Chapter 44, Section 7, and further to authorize the Board of Selectmen to grant a conservation restriction pursuant to Mass General Law Chapter 184, Sections 31, 32 on said property.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard, could you just give your name for the record?
I'm sorry, Charles Woodard, Old Framingham Road. I had to think for a second. We moved 3 years ago.
The differences between what you see in the motion in front of you and in the warrant that you were sent is that we now have the figure of $2,900,000 as the total, and how it's broken down as to $1,900,000 borrowing from through the Treasurer and $1 million borrowed via the Community Preservation Fund. Mr. Woodard for a presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Chuck Woodard, Chairman of the Board of Selectmen, speaking on their behalf. The Board of Selectmen has negotiated an agreement to purchase approximately 33 acres of the Johnson Farm property for conservation and passive recreation purposes. The agreed-upon price is $2.9 million. Approval of this article will once and for all determine the outcome of this property and litigation and create a new conservation property for residents to enjoy in perpetuity. And I'm going to ask Jody to point out the location of the property and kind of you could isolate Landon Road, Route 20. Route 20, Landon Road. And you can see the SVT Lyons Cutler property to the west and the along with the Sudbury's Raymond Reservation. Next slide. Under the Community Preservation Act, the town will be required to place a permanent conservation restriction on the land after it is purchased, and Sudbury Valley trustees will likely be the holder of that CR. The CR will allow public access for passive recreation, such as walking, cross-country skiing, dog walking. It will not allow the construction of buildings or a change in the use of the property. We envision a series of trails to be open to the public along the many old cart paths on the property, and it is our intent in partnership with SVT to create a trail connection to their abutting Lyons Cutler Reservation so that residents can easily and safely enjoy both properties. A small parking area along Landon Road will be constructed so that residents from all over town can enjoy the property. This next slide, this is at the 1998 town meeting, residents of Sudbury adopted as a resolution a statement about the character of the town, and it included this following statement, which I felt was very appropriate for tonight, but I think I hate to read what's on the slide, but in this case the type font is a little small, so I'll read it, and I think it's important. We value the town's essentially residential, low-density nature. A significant aspect of Sudbury's charm and character is derived from its rural, suburban feeling. Becoming more like towns near Boston would not be considered progress. This is not to say that the value and convenience of consumer-oriented commercial activity and development is not appreciated. We remain open to positive change while zealously safeguarding historical treasures and traditions. High value is placed upon Sudbury's natural resources and beauty, its open spaces, its wetlands, forests, and wildlife. The opportunities that these resources provide for enjoying and appreciating nature, for recreation, and for escaping from our hectic lives is precious. Aligned with these natural resources is the diligent protection of the quality of Sudbury's water and air. For decades, Sudbury residents have voted again and again to purchase and preserve land and ultimately voted for the adoption of the Community Preservation Act, which has, over the last 12 years, has funded over 500 acres of land valued at over $25 million. This is not a new project. We've been trying to buy this property. The town's been trying to buy this property since 2007. It's been on the town's open space and recreation plan since 2009, where it ranked in the top third of 38 parcels that were ranked using 16 different criteria. It's not a new property. It's a very important property. We've considered it so for many years. It's significant to the ecological integrity of the town with its extensive wetlands and vernal pools, its proximity to the town's drinking water supply, its upland woodland and meadow habitat, adjacency to significant protected open space, and an important wildlife corridor along Landon Brook. This land, in combination with other permanently protected lands to the west and to the east, forms a large wildlife corridor of over 500 acres in Sudbury, not including the acreage from Great Meadows or the Knobscot Reservation. The Open Space and Recreation Plan also recognizes that it would be infeasible to acquire all undeveloped land, but recommends targeting land proposed for development as priorities for preservation due to the financial impact that may result. The Open Space Plan states, and I quote, "Development of these parcels brings not only a destruction of habitat and a loss of character to a neighborhood, it also increases the need for additional town services, especially educational services." So how did we get here? As previously noted, we spent a long time trying to buy this piece of property. The developer finally agreed to offer it to us, and we spent several months earlier this year negotiating a purchase price. His initial asking price was $3.7 million. We negotiated that down to $3.45 million, and to reduce our purchase price for the most sensitive portions of the property, which is our key objective, we agreed with the developer that he would retain 2 1-acre lots that are along Landham Road,
right,
which are valued at an estimated $550,000, so that the net price that the town would pay for the land we really wanted would be $2.9 million, the $3.45 million minus the $550,000 value of those lots. If he sells those lots for more than $550,000, we will split the excess value. So the concern there was we didn't want to leave any money on the table, and we won't. There will be restrictions on those lots, so they can only be developed as single-family homes. So the question that the immediate question we all have is $2.9 million fair to the residents and taxpayers of Sudbury? You've all read in the paper the owner recently exercised his option with the Johnson family, and he paid only $1.5 million for the land. But he also spent another $2.6 million on engineering, other consulting, and legal fees to develop and litigate commercial plans for the property. And we've asked for, and town staff has received and reviewed, all of the receipts that document that $2.6 million. So we didn't rely on what he was saying. We actually give us the receipts, and we'll look at them. But then the question is, all right, he spent the money. Did the $2.6 million create additional value? So during our negotiations, a property appraisal was completed for the town based on the assumption that a 68-unit development plan would be approved. And that concluded with a $3.45 million value for that particular development scheme on that property. While the appraisal was based on certain assumptions, it did confirm that significant value had been added to the property as a result of a lengthy and expensive permitting process that increased the likelihood of eventual approval and construction of a major development. So what are the risks? It's important to understand the trade-offs here as we consider the question of purchasing this piece of property. The current development plan calls for 68 units of rental housing. While no development plan has final approval, and in fact litigation may continue for years, it is very likely that there will be a development in the range of 68 units on the property when all litigation is completed. Case law supports this position again and again. State law was designed to make these things happen, not to be averted. The 68-unit plan will all have costs and impacts associated with it: education, municipal services, added traffic on the roads, all typical costs associated with development. And it is a fact that the cost of servicing residential development is permanent, while the cost of purchasing and preserving the property is finite. After paying off the bond to purchase the property in 20 years, there will be minimal to no costs associated with owning this property. It's also true that significant open space will be preserved under the 68-unit development plan, as well as provision for public access. Approximately 22 acres on the northwest portion of the property are not developable due to wetland laws and would remain in their natural state even with the development of 68 units. And it is possible the owner would allow a public access through the development. However, these conditions are not formalized, so it is not a certainty. The only certainty that the land will be preserved and public access created is by purchasing the property. More importantly, the development of a dense housing complex of 68 units immediately abutting the wetlands and vernal pools with significant fill, pavement, and automobile traffic would have a detrimental impact on the wildlife corridor this property is expected to enhance. The entire property, I emphasize the entire property, received a high ranking on the town's open space plan, even though it was a fact then also that 22 acres of it were wetlands. We've been asked why not let it be developed so that it contributes to the town's 40B inventory. 68 units would increase the inventory by 1.1% to just over 7%. Although the development of this parcel into 68 rental units could provide a diverse housing style that is currently underrepresented in Sudbury, we believe the Johnson Farm land is not an appropriate location for dense housing and that development at the scale proposed could result in irreversible impacts to the natural resources on and surrounding the property. We continue to work on more appropriate locations to provide affordable housing to fulfill this need. And I'd now like to turn the podium over to Vice Chairman Pat Brown, who is the Board of Selectmen's representative on the Community Preservation Committee.
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. Next slide, please.
Sorry for interrupting, Pat, particularly what you just started. Can you give us, that's the 10-minute buzzer. Can you give us some idea how long you're going to be?
2 minutes.
Hall, give permission for 2 minutes. Raise your hands, please. Those opposed, please go ahead, Pat.
Okay. Next slide, please. Sorry. The selectmen proposed two funding sources to pay for this purchase. We recognize the limitations on the CPA budget. A $2.9 million bond sufficient to pay for the entire cost of purchasing Johnson Farm would use CPC's bonding capacity for the next 10 years. The selectmen want to preserve CPC's ability to act on future opportunities. The selectmen have requested, and the Community Preservation Committee has approved, $1 million of CPA funds to be bonded over 20 years. We request that town meeting authorize a debt exclusion for the remaining $1.9 million. This will increase taxes over the 20-year life of the bond. The tax impact on the average residential tax bill is $22 per year, decreasing to approximately $16 per year at the end of the term. After the bond is paid off in 20 years, the tax increase is eliminated entirely. The $1.9 million debt exclusion also requires a ballot vote at the special election scheduled for next Tuesday. Both town meeting and ballot affirmation are required to authorize the purchase. Sudbury Valley Trustees has initiated a private fundraising campaign to assist with the purchase of Johnson Farm, and the selectmen have pledged that any funds gifted to the town by SVT will decrease the final debt exclusion figure, which will decrease the tax impact dollar for dollar. The trustees have, in the short time available to them, raised $64,982. Next slide, please. The following boards, committees, and organizations have been discussing this property over the last several weeks and have all voted in support of purchasing the Johnson Farm property. Johnson Farm has long been recognized as an important part of a large, diverse, and ecologically significant complex of habitats supporting a diversity of wildlife. The town has recognized this parcel on the Open Space and Recreation Plan. This is our opportunity to acquire this land. We urge your support of this article, and please remember to vote next Tuesday, December 9th. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval.
The Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously recommends approval.
On this one, we asked the CPC. Can we get a mic over there?
Yeah, the CPC supports.
Thank you. Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 2? Right down here in front.
Thank you. Good evening. Stan Kaplan, 98 Victoria Road. This is project proposal has been going on for 7 years now, and I'm very, very pleased that we have an opportunity to buy this land. This is a big deal, not only because it would preserve 33 acres of open space, but the Johnson Farm parcel is contiguous to the Sudbury Valley Trustees' Lyons and Cutler Reservation, making this forming a large wildlife corridor of over 200 acres. So this is a big deal. But the question I want to examine tonight is the following. Why should the town of Sudbury pay $2.9 million to the developer for 33 acres of land when only 11 acres of land can be developed? That's the question I want to address this evening. Namely, what would a developer be willing to pay for 11 acres of development of developable land in Sudbury? That's the way I'm looking at it. So, I take a look at this slide. The first one being the Johnson Farm current 2014 proposal. And as the chairman mentioned, in addition to the $2.9 million, the buyer, strike that, the seller has been offered two acres of a parcel, 1 acre each for a house lot, for a $275,000 per acre price. Now, to me, the buyer and seller has set a fair market value of $275,000 as the benchmark for these 2 1-acre lots. So if I take $275,000, is everyone following me here? If I take the $275,000 times 11 developable acres, mind you, it includes infrastructure, roads, utilities, that's included in the 11 acres, it comes to 11 times 275, $3,025,000. The town is paying $2,900,000, so I think it safely passes that test. And then what I did was I went back to the latest or the last open space property that the town purchased in 2005. It's called the Libby property. It's along Water Row here in Sudbury. It was 24 acres in total, 9 of which was developable. So if you the town paid 9 years ago $2,631,000 for this property at 9 acres. That would be per acre $192,382, which is more than that we're paying now, which is the 263. So the 263 is lower than the benchmark of 275, and the 263 is lower than the last purchase of property per developable acre of 292. So in my view, that answers the question, is the town of Sudbury overpaying? And my answer is absolutely not. So the other litany of benefits which have been, will be addressed, are being addressed, it preserves 33 open acres of open space in perpetuity. It permanently protects wildlife habitat, preserves rural and agricultural character, provide opportunities for passive recreation and environmental education, protect and enhance wildlife corridors, provide connections to existing trails and potential trail linkages, protect drinking water, quantity and quality, provide flood control and storage, and preserve surface water bodies. That's a litany of benefits. And I remind you, open space cannot be recreated. Once it's gone forever. And so I am assiduously support this purchase. And the time has come. We have an opportunity to put this closure to this matter. We have congruity between the seller and the buyer. Thank you very much.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the yes on the aisle, ma'am?
Doris Goldthwaite of 141 Goodmans Hill Road. I certainly support the important priority of purchasing this for conservation purposes. However, I have a significant a reservation about the funding mechanism that's been proposed. We have a community preservation fund that allows us to responsibly plan our fiscal purchases, and I've heard from everyone that this has been a known property of high priority for a long time. So what I don't know is what the balance is in our community preservation fund, and if that balance is sufficient to cover the whole cost, which in my opinion it should be used for, why does the Finance Committee and the Community Preservation Fund not wish to support what has been expressed as a high priority for them from that fund that is expressly for that purpose. I also have one other comment. In the supporting materials for this, I was sad to see a negative reference to the idea of children and families moving into town. On our slide about the character of Sudbury, it was very articulate about the values of open space, which I completely support. However, I've always thought that the most people move to town to afford their children and families the opportunity of enjoying open space and excellent education. And when I start to hear talk of not wanting to pass that opportunity on to the next generation of families and children, I am troubled by that.
Mr. Moore, do you have an answer to that question asked of CPC?
Hi, Chris Morley, the chairman of the Community Preservation Committee. We would love to buy everything. We can't buy everything, and that's our problem. So in discussing this situation for three different meetings, actually, what had happened over the years is we were receiving larger money from the state to match our funds, and we also had higher priority pieces of land than this, actually, that we were saving money for. So many of you may know the Pantry Brook Farm north of the high school here, on 50 acres on both sides of Concord Road. That was the biggest project we were saving money for, and we spent our money on it. So we still have money, and we still have some bonding capacity, but we don't have as much money as we really should have, should, and I suspect will happen, some other landowner walks into the town planner's office and says, I want to sell by the end of the year. So we are always trying to look forward into the coming years as opposed to right now and make sure that we have bonding capacity and cash when we need it to buy a piece of land, for instance, that may be very important for a variety of reasons, but not as widely known and as popular a purchase as this one. So in the end, the compromise, which the selectmen had already presented to us without our asking, worked for us, it worked for them to split the responsibility. So that's the long answer.
Yes, on the end of the first row. No. Could you stand up, please?
Frank Kontowski, 42 Cutler Farm Road. As Stan said, this has been a long road for many of us. This proposal was originally made about 5 years ago for the development on Johnson Farm, and 7 years if you include Avalon. Throughout that time, I think there has been agreement throughout the town that this is the wrong site for this development. Words like tragedy, grave concerns, severe impacts, nightmare, that has been used over this entire period. What we have not agreed upon and debated is what the town could do about it. Part of the value of this land is, as Stan and Chuck said, I'm sorry, Chuck, I always want to call you Bob Woodard because of the reporter, so excuse me if I, so I will try to get the name right, is the preservation of wildlife, et cetera. But the other part is avoiding all the significant detrimental impacts that this development will cause. And I just wanted to talk about a couple of them. The fill we've talked about is 4,000 trucks of fill, or 1 million cubic feet. And that sounds like a number, it sounds like a lot, but I just want to give you a sense of what it is. If we took this huge auditorium, we filled it from that wall to that wall, from there to there, all the way to the ceiling, that's a lot of fill, right? Now let's imagine we do that 20 times. 20 times fill this auditorium. What is he going to do with all that fill? Well, the first thing he has to do is he has to cover up the wetlands. He's crossing a stream, raising the level about 12 feet, and then for the rest of the acreage, he's raising it about 5 or 6 feet. And you say, well, why does he have to do that? This is in a floodplain. He can't build things in floodplain. So a big portion of this parcel is in a floodplain. He raises it up, puts buildings on top, roads, parking spots, offices, and then to top it off, he's got a septic tank, 10,000 gallons of sewage that he's dumping into this. So you take a day like today or a spring day, the water is completely saturated. We've now piled everything on there, and you ask yourself, what happens? What happens to that sewage in the water? The water table goes up. It's pushed out. It's pushed out. Hop Brook is right there. It's pushed out into our water supply. It's pushed out into Landham Road. And this, you don't have to take my word for it. We, as part of the court cases, we hired a hydrologist, expert testimony. He said this will make the neighbor's septic systems non-compliant, which means we have a septic problem not just here, but in the neighbor's yards as well. So this is one of the devastating impacts. This violates our wetlands town bylaw, our Board of Health bylaw, our earth removal bylaw, our floodplain bylaw, our water protection bylaw, and our stormwater runoff bylaws. Those bylaws were designed to protect the health and safety of our citizens. Those have real costs that they're being violated. And by buying this land, we avoid all those bad things. Not only do we get the good things, we avoid all those bad things from happening. And that has tremendous value. So here we are, 5 years later, 7 years later, depending on how you're counting. I think we still all agree this is the wrong site. The difference now is we can agree on what to do about it. We can buy this land. We can unite. We can follow the leadership of the selectmen and the other boards, and we can buy this land for this room, for our children, and for generations to come. And I ask you to support this.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Way in the back.
Rick Johnson, Bent Road. There's quite a bit of enthusiasm tonight to purchase this property. My question is, where was the enthusiasm when it was offered to us at $1.5 million, but our planning department said the property was only valued at $700,000? So why all the enthusiasm at double the price today? Because now the taxpayers are burdened that. Instead of half the price, now it's double.
Mr. Woodard, do you have an answer?
Somebody? Are we on here? Yeah. We were in discussion with Mr. Johnson, and he passed away before negotiations were completed. So at that point, when contact was made with his siblings to see if there was still an interest to sell the property, we did not have any reply. His heirs. I shouldn't say his siblings, his heirs, his children. We did not have any reply, and they struck a deal for a much higher price with the developer, and that led to the extended battle and discussion that's been going on for the last few years.
So the much higher price was $1.5 million that you did not want to pay back then?
It's not what I said, Mr. Johnson. What I said is we were in discussion with the owner of the property, and he passed away. Discussion ended, and there was no willingness on the part of the heirs to continue to negotiate with the town. So wherever you're getting $1.5 million from, I don't know. But having sat in those discussions across the table from Mr. Johnson, along with the town manager and the town planner, we were not able to complete the discussions because of his untimely death.
So how did it slip away where it went to a developer then?
Okay, one more time. His heirs wouldn't negotiate with the town. They were approached by a developer, and they signed an offer or a purchase and sale agreement with that developer.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Lisa Vernegard. I am not a resident of Sudbury, but I am the executive director at Sudbury Valley Trustees, and I would love permission to address the hall.
Okay. All those in favor of allowing permission to speak, raise your cards. Those opposed, you have the hall's consent.
Thank you again. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Again, my name is Lisa Vernegard, and I am the executive director at Sudbury Valley Trustees, a regional land trust that is proud to call Sudbury its hometown. SVT, for those of you who may not be familiar with us, works to protect the region's beautiful natural areas for wildlife and people. Many of you will know us by the properties that we've worked to protect in the area, including Pantry Brook, Knobscot, Wallback Farm, and Memorial Forest. I would like to encourage all of you to approve the vote before you. Here's why. The Johnson Farm property contributes to the integrity of a significant and complex ecological system that includes important hydrological connections, vernal pools, upland and wetland habitat, and corridors that allow animals such as fisher, turtles, and salamanders to move freely and safely through a natural landscape. In the first one of the first slides that was put up, you saw the red Johnson Farm in the middle of a lot of green. All that green adds up to about 5,000 acres, and we've got a big red hole in the middle of that right now. So this is a very big piece of the puzzle. The property supports several animals that are known to be at risk. These include least bittern for the birders out there, American bittern, common moorhen, and blue spotted salamander. There will be a quiz afterwards. In its protected state, the property contributes to the ecological integrity of the surrounding conservation land, as I already noted. If protected in full, the property would add an important recreational asset to the community and improve significantly access to SVT's already popular Lyons Cutler Reservation, which is a 73-acre parcel. And as was noted before, the town's excellent open space plan recognizes these values and ranked Johnson Farm as an important conservation target, and we encourage the town to act on its own good planning process. To help with the successful protection of Johnson Farm, we've been working to help raise private funds that can be used towards acquisition and long-term stewardship of the property. And I can update the number slightly. Just at 5 o'clock, and we had another couple of donations come in, so we are actually past the $66,000 mark. These contributions, of course, lower the amount that taxpayers will ultimately need to contribute. And a final note. Over the last several weeks, I've heard the argument that 22 acres would be protected even if the development were allowed to proceed. While I appreciate the math, the fact is that the very intense development of the 13 acres will undoubtedly damage not only the set-aside acres, but the surrounding conservation lands as well. Lighting, vehicular traffic, residents' pets, changes in hydrology that Frank mentioned through water extraction and waste and stormwater discharge, landscape management, and the outright destruction of uplands and wetlands will harm wildlife, remove or reduce recreational opportunities, and harm the scenic character of the area. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Hang on. Yes, sir.
Tom Power, Union Ave. It is a big deal, and I fully appreciate the conservation measures, the ecological protection, the hydrology protection stuff. But what I'm not really comfortable with is the prospect that to throw the developer a bone and let him keep development rights for a small portion of the property, while the town does not reserve that right for itself, seems to be leaving options on the table. If there are 11 acres on the property that would have been developable for commercial or residential operations, then I don't understand why the town is beholden to preserve the entire property for conservation and whatever passive recreation accounts for. I've long believed that the town does not own enough land in a developable state for its own purposes. Recreation fields may come, other passive recreation. The dearth of soccer fields and softball fields has often been mentioned. But the inability to place a South Sudbury fire station, should we need one, or other development operations that would support the water district, seems to be permanently excluded from the restrictions that are placed on this as a conservation property. The fiscal numbers that the gentleman presented are quite accurate, but only insofar as they apply to the development rights as well. The numbers that he used as the top line for how much those lots are appraised for residential purposes should not really be applied to the other 11 acres at the same ratio, because we're not getting the benefit from a developable lot if we abide by the conservation restrictions that are in this act.
Thank you. Mr. Woodard?
Let me respond to the comment about the preserving or holding on to those last 2 acres. The negotiated purchase price was $3.45 million, and the question for the board was, how do we pay for this in a way that's most likely to succeed, and that it was be would be the and it, which would be the fairest deal to the taxpayers of Sudbury. So we paid for it in three pieces: the $1 million of CPA funds we talked about, the $1.9 million debt exclusion, and the last piece was to say, you, the developer, retain 2 of the acres. The $3.45 million was for the entire, for 35 acres. We said to the developer, you retain these 2 acres and reduce the price that the town has to pay to the extent of the value of those 2 lots. So it was really a question of, we didn't want to ask the town to pay $3.5 million. And we didn't think it was worth it to the town to buy those 2 lots that fronted on Landham Road.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Yes, could you stand up over there, please? Can we get a mic? Why don't we try the young woman there, and then you'll be next. And ma'am, when you finish, could you just turn around and pass the mic behind you?
Certainly. I am Maura Moran. I live on Brookdale Road. And I appreciate all of the comments that have been made about the acquisition of this land for conservation purposes. But there was also some mention of the recreational uses to which this might be put. And the question I have is, for the parking lot and the paths, what are you expecting, estimating, the cost of those things to be? Where do you expect those funds to come from? And what's your timetable?
Do we have any estimate of the... You want to take that? I'm going to ask Jody Kablock, the Director of Planning and Community Development, to answer the question.
Good evening. Jody Kablock. What we're doing right now is working with SVT to work with them to hold the conservation restriction on the property and also to help us develop a trail system, develop a parking area, and possibly to even maintain those areas. So SVT has a vested interest, Lisa has been speaking about it, in that they do not have a good way to access their Lyons Cutler reservation, which has wonderful trails on it but has no trailhead parking. So they have offered to us to work with us to help us create this. And what we're hoping is that it would come at no cost to the town to both create the parking, the trails, and to maintain them with SVT's help.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Brian Kane. I live at 33 Victoria Road. I'm going to be voting yes in favor of purchasing the Johnson Farm property from the developer. The reason being that a yes vote in favor of purchasing that property will mitigate the impact that a development of this magnitude would have on our roadways and our schools in that area. If the development were approved, this would be the fifth high-density development in a one-mile radius on the south side of Sudbury. The reality is, though, it's not just the South Sudbury issue. This is an issue that would impact all of Sudbury. The reason being is that the proposal is for a 68-unit development. When you crunch the numbers, that comes out to about a minimum of potentially 47 children attending school. And not all those 47 children, and maybe more than 47, are all going to fit into Loring. That would force a redistricting of the zones where children would need to attend school. This becomes a Sudbury issue, not a South Sudbury issue. It will impact everyone. So that's critical. The other issue, and Frank highlighted a couple of good key examples, but another issue is just traffic. For those of you who live in the general area, Landham Road is a very high traffic area. It's a busy road. It also intersects with Route 20. It's a very dangerous intersection. There's no street lights there. So again, the magnitude of a development of this size and the impact it would have on traffic would be inconceivable, especially with no traffic lights at that corner. So traffic would be not only an issue, but even a detriment at some point with just the high volume of vehicles that would be going up and down Landham and also trying to get out onto the intersection where it hits Route 20. There's already two developments on that corner now, and this would be another one right behind it. And then lastly, just to touch upon some of the issues that Frank mentioned, flooding is an area. It's known that Landham Road floods quite a bit already. It's due to the nature of the wetland. But you put a development of this magnitude in that area, and you're going to have enhanced issues with flooding, and it's due to the rising of the water table, the sewage runoff, et cetera. Again, these are all very, very serious issues. They impact not only the south side of Sudbury, but the entire town. And I'm going to be voting yes in favor of this particular article. I hope many of you will as well. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? Hang on. Yes, sir. Right behind you. Mike.
67 Thompson Drive. There was a question that was asked, and that was, how much does the CPC have? And it was never answered. So I'd like the question to be answered because I believe in the project. I'm not sure I believe in the funding.
Yep. Jody Kablak.
Chris Morley, but I do have the spreadsheet here. I was going to give it to Chris. Currently, in their unrestricted reserve or their savings account, there's approximately $2.865 million.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 2? The question's been called. Does anyone, just for the benefit of the hall, how many people wish to speak? I see one. Anybody else? What's that? So we got two people who wish to speak. The question's been called by three people wish to be heard to add new information to what's already been said. So the procedure is, once the question's been called, to tell the hall that for its benefit. It's a two-thirds vote, so we have to proceed immediately to it. Does that call the question receive a second? It does. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We're going to move on to the vote. We see the motion on the screen in front of you. This is also a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's an excellent question. I'll try and explain the difference. The problem is that the deed to the current seller says 37.1 acres, more or less. The comprehensive plan that was brought before the ZBA, those plans said 35 acres, more or less. The Sudbury assessor's records say that the property is acreage is 37.04. So what the town did, the draftsman of this article did, was put up to 37 acres. So if it's 37 acres, we'll get it, and then minus the 2 acres that stay with the seller. So it's never going to be 37. So it's either going to be 35 or 35 minus 2, or 33. So the point was to use the higher number for this purpose. You're absolutely right, Mr. DePompei. I think in the warrant it says 35 acres, and that was taken from the comprehensive plan acreage. But that's the reason for the difference, and it seemed like it was prudent to go higher rather than lower in case. Okay. Thank you for the question. So we're going to move on to a vote. The motion is as you see it on the screen. All those of you in favor of the motion, please signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it's way more than two-thirds. Article 2 passes. Thank you. We're going to move on to Article 3. Mr. Woodard?
Mr. Moderator, the Board of Selectmen moves to indefinitely postpone Article 3.
Does that receive a second? Mr. Woodard?
Mr. Moderator, the Finance Committee approved the transfer of $15,000 from the town's reserve fund to to fund the project that was going to be funded by money in Article 3, so we no longer need that money.
Can you repeat? Okay, could you please be quiet on your way out, Mr. Woodard? Could you, you're moving indefinitely, postpone it. Can you repeat what you said, please?
Article 3 requested $15,000 from free cash to fund the initial engineering work on an east-west rail trail. Since we prepared that article, the Finance Committee has approved the transfer of $15,000 from the town's reserve fund, so we no longer need to request the transfer of money from free cash, so we're asking to indefinitely postpone the article.
Okay, and that received a second. Finance Committee? Have an opinion? Any opinion on the indefinite postponement?
We have no opinion.
So the selectmen have an opinion on indefinite postponement?
The selectmen support indefinite postponement.
Okay. Discussion. Anybody wish to talk about the indefinite postponement? I see no hands. If I've missed you, please stand. I still see no hands. This is a majority vote. All those in favor of the indefinite postponement signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. I have just a very brief, two brief administrative matters. Before taking up the last article, Article 4, the non-binding resolution, I'd like to thank all who have helped town meeting. Particularly, I'd like to thank all of you for coming to town meeting and staying and exercising your right to legislate. Thank you. As I have said at town meeting every single year, in fact, every single session, sometimes there's more than one in a year, at every single session of town meeting that I've presided at, that I am very proud to be your moderator. This being, hopefully, my last town meeting, we've never had two full town meetings before. I would just like to say once again, thank you to you for giving me this privilege. We're now moving on to Article 4, which is a non-binding resolution. There will be a total of up to 5-minute presentation by the presenter of the resolution. There is no second on a resolution as it is non-binding, but gives the selectmen a sense of the hall. And then we'll ask the Finance Committee to give its position, and then we'll have the selectmen's position. As we have done in the past 7 years on 8 previous non-binding resolutions, there were no amendments, no debate, and no head count. I will ask for a show of hands and estimate whether the resolution passes, fails, or is too close to call. Mr. Williamson. Could you stand, please, and just wait for Mike?
Brian Semple, 15 River Road. First of all, Mr. Moderator, thank you for trading numerous emails with me this week on the subject. My point of order is, by my reading of the town bylaws, and actually by others who have also raised this issue over the years, the town bylaws don't give the moderator or the town council the right to change how warrant articles are discussed. The town bylaws are very clear on how articles are dealt with, and in fact, they call out the exceptions when they are. This was up, and in fact, up until 2004, and your facts are correct, 7 out of the last 8 years, all articles were debated, including things such as the non-binding article. I think what you're going to see is it's important tonight to discuss this, but one, because the bylaws, I believe, require it. And second, I think as you listen to these articles, these non-binding articles end up serving as policy for future, just for future actual articles that come before the board. You'll notice if you look back, we've done non-binding articles on affordable housing, senior tax credits, and the rail trail. So I ask that we debate this article when it's done, especially because this article is particularly confusing, partially misleading, and I'm not sure if the Board of Selectmen even took a position on it. So I ask that we follow the bylaws and debate this. Thank you.
On your point of order, Mr. Semple, so for the hall's benefit, a question has arisen whether I can make a moderator's rule which does not allow debate on non-binding resolution. I have just received tonight from town council a legal opinion on that subject as follows. It's dated today, and it reads as follows. Concerning your inquiry, There is nothing in the Sudbury bylaws that would be violated by a moderator's rule that did not permit debate by town meeting voters on non-binding resolutions. Such a rule has been in effect since 2007 and has been consistently followed since then. The history of this matter is that I did indeed institute that rule about no debates on non-binding resolution in 2007 and have specifically repeated at each town meeting subsequent to that at which there was a non-binding resolution that we would not be debating the non-binding resolution. Several of these eight non-binding resolutions, ironically, had to do with rail trail issues, including the ones 2 months ago, which dealt with the Massachusetts Central Rail Trail surface, as does this Article 4 recently before you. So I would respectfully disagree with Mr. Semple that it would be illegal to have such a moderator's rule, and town council supports that position. Having said that, it seems to me that given the hour, if the hall, given those circumstances, desires to debate this Article 4, I will allow that to go forward. So, all those who wish to debate Article 4 signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It is defeated overwhelmingly. We will then do what we've done for the last 7 years. Mr. Williamson will give up to 5-minute presentation. We will ask the Finance Committee for their opinion, and we will go on and ask the Selectmen for their opinion.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. Move in the words of the resolution as posted in the warrant.
Go right ahead. It doesn't require a second.
The Selectmen's goals for 2014 are there in the first paragraph. And you note that those goals concerning the Mass Central Rail Trail have two parts. The first part is to support the construction of a greenway on the Mass Central Rail Trail. That's step one. And step two is when state and federal funds become available to build a full-fledged rail trail to the usual rail trail standards. So I want to point out that this article does in no way negate the first part of that. At the September special town meeting, the town voted overwhelmingly to pursue the development of the Mass Central Rail Trail, number one. Number two, it voted overwhelmingly on a non-binding resolution to pursue the development of a greenway. And this, there's been some confusion as to whether this article that I put up negated that first part. No, it does not. They are companion pieces in parallel. I should further note that the deliverables set out by the Board of Selectmen were to find out the status of plans in other towns. In fact, there was a big meeting in Waltham about a week and a half ago where there was a lot of discussion in other towns, and asked the legislators to seek funding for design and construction in Sudbury. In fact, at that meeting in Waltham, there was a almost unanimous opinion that the state MAPC should draft a letter from all the communities urging them to support DCR's plans for a rail trail on the Mass Central. Now, there's been some confusion as to what is in the transportation bond bill and what is not. This is the submission by one of our two senators, Michael Barrett, concerning the Wayside Trail in the Mass Central. This is straight out of what is available on the governor's website. Wayside Mass Central Rail Trail, $36 million to develop the trail from the center of Waltham to the center of Berlin. This is the map that's included with that transportation bond bill. I note where Sudbury sits on that map.
I note where the Mass Central Rail Trail traverses Sudbury in the green at the bottom there, and there is the number straight out of the transportation bond bill of $36 million. Now, I should point out that a bond bill does not appropriate money. It's an authorization. So the next step in order to get this thing built is to actually have an appropriation of the funds to go ahead and pursue construction. Now, the rail trail that we're talking about it goes east-west through Sudbury, roughly parallel to Route 20. It intersects the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail right down near Chiswick Park and Sudbury Lumber. And I want to point out this is a priority project for two of the state departments, the Department of Transportation, MassDOT, and the Department of Conservation and Recreation. And I'm going to show you two large documents where this priority is outlined. This is the cover of the Mass Department of Transportation Bay State Greenways Paths to a Sustainable Region. And I might know that greenway is used in many different ways. It does not necessarily mean soft surface. And you note in that previous photo, that is called a greenway by MassDOT. At any rate, getting into that report, here is a listing of priority projects. And number three on the list is the Mass Central Rail Trail, which includes Sudbury. This is the companion document from the Department of Conservation and Recreation. DCR used to be called the Department of Environmental Management. In this document, the Mass Central Rail Trail is listed as a very high priority project because it connects so many other rail trails throughout the region. In fact, the Mass Central runs east-west and almost other foot and bicycle projects are north-south.
That's 5 minutes. I'm sorry?
Two more.
Hang on. Does the hall wish to grant 2 minutes to Mr. Williamson? Those in favor, raise your cards. Those opposed, go ahead, Mr. Williamson.
Now, I remind you that we are moving forward with the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. That's the north-south one. And the town voted for design funds for the Bruce Freeman last May. The initial filings have been done, and a design and engineering firm has been chosen, and I think the work has started. It's about to start if it hasn't started. Now, the sooner we can get started with going for state funding on the Mass Central, the better off we are. In fact, it would be just great if the state would build this and no Sudbury funds would have to go into it. The reason to consider putting Sudbury funds into it is that it might happen sooner, and we could have a temporary trail if there was an extended time before the state funds came through. We'll have to see whether that's the case. At any rate, this support of this article says to the Department of Conservation and Recreation, we support your commitment to developing a paved trail on the Mass Central. And that was stated at the meeting in Waltham. And there's no downside to making a concerted effort. In fact, both of our state senators and our state rep, they're all on board to push for getting state funding to get this done. Just a note on cost considerations. If Sudbury does this on its own, we have to pay 100% of the cost. And if it's done by the state, we pay nothing. The state funds will cover the whole thing, and we'll have a first-class trail. So I urge you to vote yes on Article 4. It will be a major recreational amenity for Sudbury. This east-west trail, the Mass Central, in combination with the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, will put a huge fraction of Sudbury's population within a short distance of a trail to get around town, a bike trail. If the town does not spend money on a soft surface trail, then it would save $1 million. If the town, on the other hand, roughly $1 million, if the town decides it's worth having a temporary trail for $1 million, there's no reason that the town can't go ahead and support such a move. This is not in opposition to such a move. And a yes vote will emphasize Sudbury's commitment to a paved rail trail paid for with state and federal funds, and both MassDOT and DCR are on board with urging a paved rail trail. Thank you.
Okay. Does the Finance Committee have an opinion on this subject?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
The Selectmen, is there a, what was the vote on the Selectmen for the, on this issue?
The Board of Selectmen takes no position.
Takes no position. Okay. We don't have to worry then. That's it. Ooh, I don't know about this one, Mr. DePompei. Try again. It's a point of order or a question? Questions don't do it. Can we give him a mic, please?
Danny Pompey, Haynes Road. Mr. Williamson was given the opportunity to present this article to the Board of Selectmen at the Board of Selectmen meeting just prior to special town meeting. I appreciate the fact, and I'm not questioning, please don't think I'm questioning your authority, Mr. Moderator, because I'm not questioning your authority. At the Board of Selectmen meeting, although they announced it as the Board of Selectmen does not take a position, they in fact were incapable of determining exactly what this article said, which I think is...
Mr. DePompei, that's not really a point of order. We've asked tonight the Board of Selectmen, and I'm told by the chair that...
Well, the point of order is this resolution basically conflicts. It says the town supports a paved rail trail for the Mass Central Rail Trail, when in fact we've already passed two prior resolutions that leave it open as to whether it's paved or not paved.
Okay. Thank you. We're going to move on to a vote. As with other non-binding resolutions, I will not count the vote. I will just let you know what I see with a show of hands. All those in favor of Article 4 as made, of the motion, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Do I have a motion to dissolve this town meeting? Is there a second? All those in favor, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. Thank you once again.
Nice.